that you're born an Italian. If you want your life to be great, see that you're born an Italiano and your life will be great.
Hey there, Paisani. Welcome back to another episode of the Italian American Podcast. And it is the Christmas season, so Buon Natale coming on up. We are here in the month of December, and we're going to be spending a lot of time talking about the Christmas season and all the stuff that comes with that in Italian America. Joined by my partner in crime, the notorious POB, Patrick O'Boyle, and the Belle of Bensonhurst, Miss Rosella Rago, and a return guest today who is
a titan.
A titan, an authority.
He is the titan. The titan.
Yes.
Not a titan. The titan.
The titan.
The titan.
Yes. He was on the show. I looked it up this morning because I wanted to know. It was almost 2 years ago. Episode 175. Gianluca Rotoro has been...
If you play the pick three, you think that'll come out, 175?
If you
My mother hears the number, then she's going to run to the deli and play.
Go buy the number, 175. He is the author of Wine Made Easy. He's come on and spoken about that before. But he's got a new book now, Ma, What Are You Cooking?, that we're going to talk about a little bit. But needless to say, his biography precedes him.
That book is so good that before I read it, I swing incense. Like
yeah.
Gospel. I incense it.
This is an incredible encyclopedic volume that he's brought here. And so, Gianluca, welcome back as a host more than anything today, not so much a guest.
Thank you so very much. It's a great pleasure to be here. And I know usually people coming back for a second time isn't a thing, so I'm more than doubly honored. I think it was almost 3 years ago that I was in the pod. It was February of 2021.
Yeah.
And I remember, because we were just speaking about Malocchio, because after the podcast, I remember I had a raging headache, and I wonder, was it because I wore the original 1980s Maradona boot? Novelty shirt? I'm like, did they like it? And maybe someone said, I like that shirt too much. And then anyway.
You got the horns.
Yeah.
And you got after this book, for this is a public service announcement. He also got the horns after this book, which is a sign of excellence.
Thank you. You
had a situation last night. You almost couldn't be here today.
Yeah. So, you know, I just moved to nearby to you and have a nice house that nothing but problems, brand new. But talk about Malocchio. So all of a sudden, all the alarms were going off in the house. And they're all connected, you know, with wires electrically. But. Took the batteries out. They wouldn't stop beeping.
Doesn't matter.
I even took a pill to go to sleep. I slept about 2 hours. I text Pat at like 5 in the morning or something. I was like, I hope he's not going to hear it ring. I said, I might not be able to make it, but I am because of how much I love you guys and I love what you do. I was just mentioning it before. I think it's very important because what you guys do, which should be noticed and lauded, is really doing it for the culture. There's some people who do it for the ego, but you guys do it for the culture. And this is really important because while it is true, as my mother likes to say, nothing unifies Italians more than jealousy, which in Italy it's invidia, not gelosia. Gelosia is between his relationships. So it's more of an envy. But you guys really do it because you guys are good people and you care about the great parts of our culture.
And we're mentally ill. That's the punchline. Remember, John, remember what they say in Napoleon. Better to be envied than to be pitied.
That's great.
Yeah, that's very true. Well, you know what? I know how much you love what you do and how much of yourself you put into it and into this amazing book, which we are going to talk about because Pat says this is your nighttime reading.
Yeah, incense to that.
Those are the bedtime stories Pat wants.
Yeah.
This is bedtime stories.
Pat's bedtime
stories. I never
stories.
Thought about that.
Types of flowers.
We should right? do.
I could just imagine Pat in his long, like, bedtime cassock. His little hat.
Like Ebenezer Scrooge.
I
wear very high-end Portuguese pajamas. Wow, they're phenomenal.
Why Portuguese?
Because they make the best flannel pajamas.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. Who want to get flannel
pajamas? Who would know that? Really, only Pat.
Because nobody wears pajamas anymore.
Are they are they monogrammed or anything?
And that's like, I didn't want to be that.
It's a step too far?
I mean, like, I'm walking around the house. Like,
you know, my brother bought my dad one Christmas, and my dad ended up loving it. It's like a real... English, like Churchillian robe over your pajamas. My father's a pajama connoisseur. Like, he loves pajamas, wears this full set. And he bought him this robe, and it looks like a smoking jacket almost. It's so intense, and it's like Victorian. And he loved it. I got it next time.
A smoking jacket?
But it's not. It's a robe. It's a robe.
But you know what? The Portuguese... This is true.
See you in
it's a shame. People think we make this up.
No.
It's true. My Portuguese pajama maker also has matching robes, and I never bought the robes.
Really?
But what am I going to do, walk around with the robe, like the smoking jacket?
I feel like robes are...
You know what I should get, and I can't find, is the hat.
Yeah, you need the sleep cap.
Christmas Carol, yes. the cap with the pom-pom.
You so need
you
it.
You ever see the Curb Your Enthusiasm episode with the rope that he gives to Hugh Hefner?
No.
And he steals it? Yeah, it's a pretty good.
I probably have because I've seen.
It's a pretty good episode.
I have to think I've seen every episode of that
show. How do we go off on these tangents?
That's what the show is. This show, whatever the Italian translation for Lost with No Directions, how would we?
Seinfeld. It's a show about nothing. So listeners,
play Pochino anymore?
Wait, listeners, if you're thinking of a gift to get our dear Patrick, you know, he's very hard to shop for.
Yes.
What do you get the man who has everything and doesn't like anything?
That's
you get
not
him,
true.
You get him the hat with the sleeping cap.
You get him focaccia.
Really?
That was an excellent gift.
That's
I got in
gift.
My row is like a, what do you call it? Not psychic. Like, you know when they can read people?
I am psychic.
Yeah, psychic.
All right.
Yeah.
Psychic, whatever you want to call
clairvoyant
it. Clairvoyant. Yeah. When you can read, she sent me the greatest gift possible.
Focaccia.
She sent me her focaccia set.
I sent him a focaccia.
You could have sent me gold in the same weight, and I would not
have. Well, that's because I tried to give you the pan last time. We recorded all together. And Dolores Mariul
the pan.
By the way, we're probably not supposed to announce this, but people have been expecting. Dolores did, in the time since we've last all recorded together, did have her second son.
And she did the right thing.
Yep,
she named
Giovanni,
it after her father.
After her dad.
So her first son's named after her father-in-law, and her second son's named after her father.
Yeah, I think it's Giovanni Joseph.
You know what I told her? I don't care. If you don't want to listen, don't listen anymore. I said, you know, she got married at a time that some people have challenges with fertility, and God blessed her very early on with a son. And she was going to name the son after her deceased father, but part of her wanted to name it after Drew's father, which was the Italian tradition. When she went to her mother, she said, no, your father, we want it named after your father-in-law, because that's right. The right thing to do. So she bypassed naming the baby after her deceased father for her father-in-law, and God blessed her at this age with a second child.
Yep, that's true.
And I am convinced it's because she did the right thing.
The only part of that story she would hate is that you said at this age, but yes, that's absolutely right. We are what we are, right?
50 in 14 and 13 months.
Wow, yeah, you are.
How could that be?
What are we going to do for that celebration?
No.
Come on.
No. That's not a celebration.
We're going to be in Florida for
I want to hand out gold
coins.
We got to get like a Sicilian carrozza.
Yes, carry him in.
See, they had to come into this too? Why do I need a Sicilian carrozza?
With the donkeys. We got to find some donkeys.
What's the Neapolitan equivalent? The cucagna. We'll bring you on a cucagna.
We got to get Prince Charles's coronation carriage. That's all gold. 50 is a golden birthday. We have a year to get a golden carriage.
We'll work on it.
Can I go through Florida in a golden carriage?
I would love it. We got to
get like a what's
chariot.
That? No, we got to get a Capo di Monte.
Yes.
Throne.
Exactly.
Or something.
All Capo di Monte.
But you got to understand something about Capo di Monte. Growing up surrounded by Capo di Monte, it's very fragile.
Yes, it is.
It's in the museum living room you don't use. Because if you were in there.
You ever go to people's house and their little, the petals are chipped on the flowers?
A lot.
You know, and you feel bad, but like, you know, does that always like give you a little like shkostumata vibe? Like, it's like you weren't careful with the Capo di Monte. What kind of person are you?
Yeah, you do need like some sort of repair kit when you have it. We could do like Game of Thrones, you know, the throne made out of all the old swords. We can make a throne out of all chipped Capo di Monte for him. That'll be his throne.
Like a mosaic.
50, like a mosaic.
We should get a portrait of him made out of a mosaic of Capo di Monte chips.
Good idea.
That's actually a good idea.
It's fantastic.
I think that's a portrait of you, like a really fine oil painting. That may be my 50th birthday gift to you.
Wait, I think my mother is going to do a painting of him.
She is? All right, good.
Do you want to be Caesar? Angela can do anything.
I've heard you say your legal robes was an option.
Yeah, but Americans don't have legal robes.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay.
Angela can make your fantasy come to life.
The uniform. You got the uniform.
I have pictures of you in that uniform. I'll use them.
That's the portrait.
This is going to be in a museum one day. The Italian-American.
At least
gonna,
the store.
It's going to at least be in the museum next door.
Speaking of museum, we are in an amazing place right now. I have to shout out where we are because Gianluca and I both live about 5 minutes from here, coincidentally. And I have some stuff at the house this week that I couldn't go into Jersey, so we said maybe we could record here. And we are being hosted by our friend who actually recorded an episode with us that is one of the lost episodes because the audio had a lot of hiccups. Our friend Luciano La Monarca from the St. Pio Foundation, and they are headquartered here at the Generoso Pope Foundation in Tuckahoe, New York, and we asked them if we could record here, and man, let me tell you, this place is
stunning. Absolutely
beautiful. It was,
really is.
I guess it was a bank at some point. It was a funeral home at some point, which to me, can't ask for two better places for Italian cultural center. And
I hate to think they were waking people in this room.
Let's hope not. We're in the boardroom under beautiful portrait of Generoso Pope and all his family members. I've been here once for an event like 10 years ago or something, but only came in briefly. But this is a great, great building, and they got a lot on the horizon coming out of here. So this is it's quite an Italian area up here.
Yeah. Speaking of Italian area, I want to give a shout out because I brought you guys some gifts, and one of the gifts happens to come from just across the street, Pasquale's Deli, and I brought bocconcini. They're more like nuts, but they are. I'm a real mozzarella, so I'm not gonna like most likely what it is, most things. And here they make fior di latte from cow's milk mozzarella, as opposed to what they make in my mother's area, which is from water buffalo. But this, tied with La Casa della Mozzarella, I find the best mozzarella I've had in the country. They're very good, so I brought you guys that.
It's a wet bag. The bag is very wet.
That's a good sign for mozzarella.
Yeah.
And I brought you guys some wines. We can try it. We can try the wine. We can talk about the wines after you guys try the mozzarella.
Yeah, let's try this. This sounds. Ooh, I mean,
all right.
Everything I've.
I don't know how many napkins.
You don't have a napkin?
Everybody that I have spoken to, you know, especially here in and around New York, knows Casa della Mozzarella,
great.
Arthur Avenue. Mm. It's also very difficult. You got to wait online the whole Christmas season.
My
stuff.
Friend Vinny, Vinny's Mutz, just opened up in Lyndhurst, New Jersey. His mozzarella is doing so well, he's expanding.
He's really?
Yes, and he's going to come on the show. I want to come on with video.
Yeah, yeah.
So that we could videotape.
We'll be video in a couple of months, really. Coming up
soon. Can I make a confession before I have my bocconcini?
Yeah.
We have a listener, Pierluigi, who sent me a Colomba last Easter, and he just went to me.
Did he send one for me too, but you ate it?
But he sent Pierluigi at Fatto a Mano. He's from Italy. He came to the United States. He immigrated to the United States. He's a young guy. He went into the pastry business, the high-end pastry business with Colomba and Panettone. They are out of this world. They are outstanding. His mother introduced me to him because she's a listener, and he sent Panettone. And I thought I was going to get three for Thanksgiving, but we only got two. We got one for you and one for John. Mm. But my brother really, really likes them. So he took one as a tax.
Yeah, it's Anthony. Anthony did it.
So you now have to split one between you.
We're going
to
eat it here.
We're going to eat it here.
After I made you that focaccia, and then I sent you a whole kit.
It's my brother. Don't blame me. My brother went. At Thanksgiving.
We'll bring Anthony back on to defend this.
No, Anthony's a Mariul. Anthony went and he said, could we have one? He goes, oh, they'll never know. Let's just have one.
Well, brother, we're going to find out. We're gonna reach out
now,
to him.
But they are outstanding. He really does. They are. For my brother justified it on it's that good. I'm going to take one as a tax.
All right, let's try
the mozzarella.
From Pasquale's first.
Pasquale's across the street in Tuckahoe.
Here in Tuckahoe. Let's give it a shot. Oh, wow. That's
very
delicious.
Good.
Mm.
They're good, right?
Wow.
Beautiful. He's actually from Calabria, and actually some of the best mozzarella makers that are around, he taught them.
Really?
Now, so my mother's area, all of Campania from Caserta, Versa area, and also my mother's area of Salerno near the Battibaglia Pestum area, they make the best mozzarella. I always argued that it was more in the Battibaglia Pestum area. That being said, the past 20 years, it definitely has not been as good. I think in the 90s, I started noticing it. My cousin, who has a wine store across the street and just sold it, she actually had a water buffalo farm. And so I grew up with it. I mean, every 5 seconds you see water buffalo where my mother's from. I think the people that are handling it changes the way the milk is. And the mozzarella has been deteriorating in quality because of how, I have to be honest, how the animals interact. I know it sounds crazy, but
no, yeah.
It's definitely true.
Well, like they're fighting more with each other?
No, it's just the people. First of all, no one's doing work because they love it.
Right.
Second of all, you know, very interesting, in the Stanley Tucci episode, they talked about how the Indians who take care of the cows in the north of Italy somewhere benefit the cows because of how the Indians treat cows very, like, as a
religiously,
So, you know, I always said something, and it was politically incorrect, but I'm like, I think the people dealing with the water buffaloes, maybe they don't care as much.
Right, of course.
And it's true, and I think it affected the milk, and it did. But it's still the best mozzarella when you do find it. But here, the fior di latte made from cow's milk mozzarella from Pasquale's is one of the best I've had.
Do you know why?
It's delicious.
I want to come out. I can't stop eating it.
Yeah,
it's good. Eat it, please. There's 50 of them. You have to get an odd number because it's bad luck.
Yeah, give me some. Here. See, but fior di latte gets a very bad rap, unfortunately, because it's unfair. My grandmother's family, before we went in the fruit and vegetable business in America, we were in the mozzarella business in Sorrento.
Oh, wow.
See, we were cheese producers.
They're known for Agerola in that area. They're known for their cow's milk mozzarella.
Yeah, we went back many generations, many, many generations in that business. And Naples was not buffalo mozzarella country.
No, it was water.
It was fior di latte country.
Fior di latte, yeah.
Because Sorrento was the Wisconsin of
Naples.
And all
still
Sorrento, is. Yeah, but Sorrento's now known for like lemons and stuff like that. At that time, it was a lot of dairy. by Agerola, before the road went from what's now Corsa Italia in Sorrento, which is the road that goes straight to Naples, before that opened in 1860, and even afterwards, people would take basically little rowboats and go over to Naples with the dairy. So they would leave, let's say, Sorrento 4 a.m. with the fresh milk and then get to Naples, and that was what that was your fresh milk in the morning. And the mozzarella that they brought was not the buffalo mozzarella.
It was that one, 100%.
It was 100%. And then once automobiles get in the picture, then you can take from Caserta and Battipaglia, you can get mozzarella di bufala to Naples very quickly because you got roads and you got trucks.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Interestingly enough, there's two things about that. One, that's also from the milk from that area when they make the Provolone del Monaco, which in the past 20 years after it attained, I think, DOP status about 20 years ago, it's becoming more interesting. It's very, very, you know, Provolone is originally Italian. The one that we find in the north was originally introduced by the Southerners. But the Provolone del Monaco, I find that even better. It has a milder and sweeter flavor, especially if it's not aged as much. But it also came from that area too. And interestingly enough, if you ask Neapolitans, and people from the Caserta area, they find that their water buffalo milk is the best for making mozzarella, whereas obviously people from the Battipaglia area, they would say that theirs is. But it's all great. But yeah, you're 100% right about the cow's milk mozzarella. And to be honest, because you can't find good water buffalo mozzarella here, they say, oh, it was imported from Italy. Yeah, like 6 weeks ago. Who the hell wants it? It tastes like baking soda.
Yeah, it tastes like it's been pickled.
Yeah. If you got a good one here, like this one here, it's much better than something imported from Italy. It shouldn't be imported.
These are so outstanding.
These are delicious.
They're incredible. It's like crack.
What's the name of the guy again?
Pasquale. It's right across the street. You go tell him Gianluca sent you. He offered it to us as a gift. So shout out to Pasquale.
Big shout out. This is one thing I love about living up here. I mean, unfortunately, my favorite cannoli place in Panigelato closed.
That's the
I used to go, for the.
And they were.
That was
important.
The happiest thing. For people who don't know, John.
It was the happiest thing.
The happiest thing.
And I'm not a big cannoli guy, though, by the way. That's the amazing thing. I'm not a cannoli guy. I like the sheep's milk in Sicily, and he was importing it. His cousin was sending him sheep's milk. Everything was perfect, and it lasted about 6 months, and then it was gone.
Speaking of cannoli, obviously the best I've had was in Sicily, but the very, very best, people will talk about Piano degli Albanesi in the province of Palermo, but more traditionalists will even say the three towns in the province of Trapani, Fulgatore, Dattilo, and Napoli, Napoli. I can't get it out of my I keep saying Napola, and the cannolo is actually like a foot long. I've never tasted anything like that in my life.
Foot long cannoli.
Yeah.
Wow.
Sounds like one of you and Irma's sketches.
Jersey City used to have the Texas Wiener.
Was that right?
12-inch. Yeah, it was a specialty hot dog. No, that's true. That was a famous Jersey thing. I don't know. There was in certain places, but I know it was in Jersey City.
The Dodger dog was a foot long hot dog, I think. They had a foot long option.
No, but yeah, no matter what, their normal cannolo is this long.
But
let's say 10 inches, whatever. Right. You know.
But that sounds like something some food blogger would eat. You know, you're going to see videos now, the foot-long cannoli. Yeah.
But no, it's totally normal.
Aren't the best supposed to be the ones that the Italian Albanians make in Piano degli
Albanesi? That's what he's saying.
I was mentioning before, but I've spoken to some people there, and they agree that it's very good, but they feel that they took the marketing more seriously. Because if you notice it, they did very good on marketing.
Yeah.
Plus, it's very, Italians love anything that's supposedly not Italian.
Right.
So if you tell someone that's Italian, hey, it's product A and product B, the exact same thing. But this one comes from, è dall'estero, mi piace di più. And it heralds back from the Roman Emperor, where coming from afar means it's the wealth of their empire. This is exotic or whatever.
So interesting.
All their fashion brands have American names.
Italians like, hate Italian stuff.
Non conosci Eddie O'Neill. I'm like,
In Italy, at Christmas time, you can't find anything that says Buon Natale. No. They don't want it. They want stuff that says Merry Christmas.
Yeah. It's crazy, isn't it?
They're even doing St.
Patrick's
Day and Halloween.
You know the whacked out thing about them? Is their t-shirts that say things they have no idea what it is.
Jump dance style.
Like a slut. Dude, and I'm like, why would you wear that? You don't even know what that means.
they wear these
horrible t-shirts that say things in English.
But to be fair, we do that in America. Like, I have a restaurant. I call it Buonasera Giorno. Or like, what?
Yeah, that's true.
What does that mean? The La Trattoria for Mickey Blue Eyes. It's like the La Trattoria.
You know what I hate? Those signs that they sell in like the in the big box stores, like Amore, Familia.
Yeah.
Hey.
Ciao.
Shut up. I sell those things.
Except if you buy them more from Rosella.
Then you know they're real.
They're authentic. But if you buy them from a big box store.
That's not fit. Listen, I created my merch, my apparel in my store because I felt like our community wasn't represented. I felt like you could find stuff that said things in so many different languages, but nothing in Italian or nothing in Itanglish because some of my stuff says Stunat or, you know.
Yeah, but you're doing it. You're coming up. I mean, I think to his point, he's saying like you go to TJ Maxx and somebody, you know, somebody.
A made in Chinese made, sign.
Yeah, some Chinese guy came
Amore,
up with like.
Yeah, Cucina,
yeah.
Cucina.
But I mean, is it much different than, Stella. You know, live, laugh, love?
No, God.
No,
you know,
not
the
really.
Signs that
no.
say live, laugh, love or
no,
whatever.
Not
I mean,
really.
Yeah.
What would a true Neapolitan sign say?
I have a sign that says I'm Amada.
No.
Who listens to this?
Didn't
you
Dolores,
just, if you're listening
didn't
to us,
Dolores
you're just as bad as
do
us.
Do needlework for you?
Yeah, that what did she give you? Like a dish towel?
Dolores
or?
Gave me a, I guess you would say, an embroidered dish towel that said, Qualche giorno mi trovo coraggio ma cido.
My
which
favorite.
Is knobbled on for one day I'm going to find the nerve to kill myself.
Do you see how hard to shop for?
But that's a knobbled on phrase of exhaustion when you just can't take it anymore.
By the way, I said this in the first podcast, and I say it again, how I first met Pat. I don't know if you remember the story.
I don't remember.
It's a great story.
So make the long story short. So about like 10 years ago, whenever it was, maybe an hour before closing, this guy comes in. He's looking and he's saying, "Oh, he's got great. You got great wines." I'm like, "Yeah, we specialize in Italian wines." And we're talking. I'm like, "This guy knows a lot of stuff, right?" And so now I'm getting happy because I'm just talking to myself about most of the stuff I think about. Who the hell is going to care about Fior di Latte from a general?
That's
right?
Us. That's why we found each other.
Yeah,
people used to talk to each other. All found each other, and now they are
the mentally ill. Yeah. We were talking about that. So. So he's talking, right? And then he's like, I was like, what's your name? Like, he's speaking in Neapolitan. I'm like, oh. I'm like, what's your name? Patrick. I'm like, Patrick. I'm like, I'm thinking, I'm like, well, how the hell, how are you, how do you know this much, right? Because off the bat, I wouldn't think you're Neapolitan by the way you look, right?
Yeah, that's
so,
true.
So I'm like, and he's speaking like really like old school, and I'm like, and saying a lot of things. I'm like, oh, this is amazing to me. I was like, I can't believe this. I found like a soulmate here. And then what sealed the deal, I was talking about how bad things were going in Italy or whatever, and I'm like, you know, you go to the supermarket, and Pat slams my counter. He goes, and everything's frozen. I'm like, yes. Yeah. I'm like, yeah. I'm like, oh, my God. So, and then, like, during the pandemic, I was listening to your podcast or whatever, and I asked Rossello, I'm like, I'm just curious. That guy that's on the podcast, because I remember Pat's voice. I have a very good memory. I wish I didn't. I wish I had amnesia from all the terror I've been
that
through.
Is the greatest Italian thing I ever heard in my life. That is the Italian t-shirt. I only wish I had it. I could hear my grandma.
John, I don't know if you're with me here. Are you envisioning the same buddy comedy movie as I am?
Send them out together.
Like,
that's
we could,
perfect.
So we're going to have a Neapolitan gastronomic buddy movie.
That is true.
Oh, didn't that Sideways? That's how they got Pinot Noir out.
Yeah, you're right. You could be the Neapolitan Sideways.
We're just but like terrible catastrophes. They have to.
The Malachi is chasing both.
Who
of
was that guy that was on the? He's famous. He did those spoof movies.
Oh,
Sasha Cohen or something.
Oh,
like
yeah,
that.
Yeah. Sasha Baron Cohen.
So
the guy who did
Borat? Would it be a mix of Sasha Baron Cohen? Sideways?
No. I'm thinking like Planes, Trains, and Automobiles.
Yes.
But you're the same kind of miserable. You're not opposites.
Wait, let's back up a second.
You're not opposites like John Candy and Steve Martin.
Wait, hold on a minute. How is this miserable? I've been very contented. I'm eating the mozzarella. I had
guys,
a nice cup of coffee. I have nothing to complain about.
All you guys talk about is your traumas and catastrophes. And
because it's very hard being,
ailments.
It's very hard being Atlas. Pushing that.
It's true. That was on my business card when I had a fitness company when I was in shape was Atlas.
Yeah, Atlas.
Holding up the planet.
What would their challenge be? They have to get home
for a holiday?
No,
they got to get the buffalo mozzarella home in time so it's still good.
The true challenge is Vesti la Giubba. That's what it means.
Yes.
When the guy's got cheated on, it doesn't matter. You got to put on your face and go out and entertain the public.
That would be, what do you call that? The song? The jingle for the TV show. What do you call that thing? The opening song?
The jingle.
The opening the credits.
What do you call that when you play the song?
Yeah, the theme song.
Pagliacci would be your
Pagliacci, yes.
Can we
that would be the name of the show, Pagliacci.
Yeah.
What does this have to do with Christmas?
I don't know.
Where did we get?
What did you want to talk about Christmas? You want to talk about tomorrow.
Want to talk about tomorrow?
Yeah, that's going out the window.
You've been on a tomorrow kick lately, by the way.
Have you ever had any of our dear, beautiful, sweet friend, Mariana Gatto's Amaro? Yeah, she's the queen of Amari.
Yeah.
She just made 732 cucidati.
Yeah, she did.
How many?
732.
That's an even number.
Than me.
See, I got to make it up.
Listen. Somebody eat one. Hurry up.
This is going to be
odd number to be good luck.
Oh,
don't tell
it
her that.
Throw them all out.
Maybe that's not a Sicilian thing. I got to figure that out.
Mariana, one's got to fall on the floor.
Yeah. Roll one over, give it to
the dog. I've never heard Sicilians have superstitions like that, but Neapolitans have a million.
All the words, yeah.
Very interesting.
You're not a superstitious people. Not like the way Neapolitans are.
Wait, oh,
yeah, John,
I thought
you were from Salerno, right?
I'm a quarter from Salerno, a quarter from Palermo.
I don't know.
A quarter from Bari, and
his,
a quarter
his
from
mother's
Basilicata.
His mother's body is in Sicilian, and you know what they say, you are what your mother is.
Yeah, that's true.
He came out of the closet. He used to be in a Neapolitan. He was a public Neapolitan, and then he came out one day as a Sicilian.
You know what happened? You know when that happened?
That was Argenio.
Yeah, they told me. Then our friends in Naples, Don Salvatore Argenio, his wife, we were at lunch with them, and we were talking about the difference between Pat and I, and she said, you, John, are just a Sicilian masquerading as a Neapolitan.
No,
it was a life changing.
She said, Pat, you truly are Neapolitan.
Yes.
But John,
you are a Sicilian masquerading as a Neapolitan. And I was like, you know what?
Then he walked out of the closet and history changed. And now all of a sudden he has painted carts. And
that's not true. I had the tattoo long before.
Sicily has two songs. You play both of them.
Oh, your attack on Sicilian music.
Even though you have a Barese Nonna, I really always saw you as a Sicilian.
My Barese Nonna, don't forget. I mean,
she
you know
became
her.
More
she
Sicilian,
became Sicilian
because
yeah.
she married the Sicilian.
Yeah.
And you know that whenever you have a mixed marriage like that, one of them's going to take over.
One side's got to give, yeah.
One's going to take over.
Yes.
Like, you know, Barese, whatever. She was a little removed Barese.
Yes, exactly.
See, like when you marry a Moles, you have no choice.
Exactly, yeah.
We will own you.
Yeah, but you're majority Neapolitan from Campania. Because remember, your grandmother's grandmother was from Avellino.
By a small fraction, you are
majority us.
And just a note, saying Neapolitan, because I had to say this all the time growing up, my mother's from Salerno.
Exactly.
But when I had explained that to people, unless you knew World War II history, most people back then didn't know Salerno. So I just said, Neapolitan.
Yeah.
And that's what they used to call me, even in soccer, my soccer team. They call Neapolitan, my Italian coach. But because who, when you say Salerno, who the hell is going to
about but Campania?
Because
Campania never had an identity until the Savoys came in and created regions.
True.
So we had all provinces. And why the Abruzzese called themselves Abruzzi, and they have such a strong identity, like the Calabrese do, was because their provinces were named Abruzzo. Abruzzi.
Well, and their provinces were...
Bourbons.
But Abruzzo and Calabria in particular, as political entities, predate everything, even to the fall. I mean, the first Norman territories were in Abruzzo and then Calabria. So those were duchies, and they were united polities even then. I mean, you're talking about, you know, the year 1030. Puglia, same thing, right? Puglia's got its Byzantine identity and things. So, yeah.
Speaking of Puglia, you know, they used to be called Calabria.
Yeah, it was all Calabria. It was the whole thing.
And Calabria was called Bruttium.
Yeah, it's a man.
And that's what Calabrese people never get it. Like, they're always kind of in the shadows.
Yeah. Always.
This is going to propel them to. It was all Calabria at one point. Everybody, Calabrese people are no trouble.
No, they're very nice.
Yeah, they're not combative.
They're like Abruzzo.
No,
they don't cause problems.
I talk about that with my mother's family and especially my wife's family. I'm like, why can't you just be a little more quiet like these people? Because they sit down. When I brought my wife to Calabria, they were eating. She's like, oh my God, you can hear everyone chew. You know? Because they're just quiet. They're just eating. It's like, you know, it's like not being, it's really weird.
They're like quietly, you know, strong people.
Yes.
But think about
hard-headed.
The 'Ndrangheta, which is the Calabrian mafia,
is
believed to be possibly the strongest in the world. And it makes sense that they quietly got there.
Yes.
Without the chaos of the Camorra and without the notoriety of the mafia in Sicily.
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah, and the Barese mafia just can't get it together.
That's the Sacro, what is it?
Corona? The Sacra Corona Unita, yeah.
Doesn't that sound like a soccer club?
Yeah,
it does. It does.
I If you listen to what they call the organized crime, it really is a great. Was it the sacred United Horn?
We're just too cheap to do anything.
Mm. Yeah, it's not a strong. It's not a strong organ. I mean,
to
from what I understand,
Campania's credit to Campania. Well, no, Sicily and Campania dominate the media.
Yes,
the filmology of is filmology a word?
I don't know, but it's a great word. If
but
it
I mean,
isn't.
If you think
filmography,
like, filmography
is.
Are you talking about
a word?
List of films?
Yeah, I mean, that's in the sense that, like, this is nothing to celebrate. So I'm not out here championing the cinematography, the cinema, whatever.
No, no, see, making go back to filmography. Yeah.
Filmography of mafia movies. But in Italy, the preponderance, I guess is the correct word over time, recently, of organized crime movies are about the Camorra in Naples.
Yeah.
So you take that movie, Camorra. But Camorra can be actually funny.
I never watched it.
The show, Camorra?
Yeah, because it's kind of wacky. It's a wacky in a Neapolitan style. Sicilian mafia movies are never funny.
No.
That's not their thing. But a Neapolitan mafia movie.
Thank you for saying that. And what was your thing that he said you don't like Sicilian music? Because I'm just curious.
No, I never said. What he said was when I'm surrounded by Sicilians and they go for the jugular, my response is your weddings play our music. Everybody in Italy plays art. So you have two songs. That's one's
true.
About skulls.
That's not
right?
True.
I saw skulls. What was it? I saw skulls all around me.
I saw a skull on a cannon.
And flowers. Flowers and skulls.
Sure. And we have a song about donkey.
What's the skull song?
I'm sorry.
That's not exactly
wait
a
wedding
song.
Vita na crozza.
Hold on. Hold on. Wait, I got to go on the record publicly. I want to recant. They also have a song about a donkey with the braying noises. So as I always say, Sicilians have two songs. In reality, they have three.
They have another song about the donkey, about how the guy cried more when the donkey died instead of when the wife died.
Yes.
Wow.
Two donkey songs.
Well, you know what? If you go back to
we got Volta, Miri Volta. We got another song. You even like that
song.
No,
they got the song Bedda.
Yeah, we got a lot of songs.
You got 6, 12.
Nobody has the Neapolitan songbook. Nobody.
The most famous, nobody has a Neapolitan songbook. But no, to get back to it, there's one of the guys that's on Instagram. Instagram now has so many interesting things about Italy. And he goes back to, I forget his name. I would plug it if I could remember the name of the gentleman and his grandmother. But they go to Calabria.
Yes, I've seen that.
And she's
Frank Moyo.
Is that who
he
is?
Yeah, that's Frank Moyo. Frank Moyo Music. He's Calabrese. He's very talented. He's a kid from Canada. And he does some of my favorite covers.
Really?
Of like 1970s Italian songs. He plays them all acoustic on the guitar. Beautiful voice.
Gotta look him up.
Kind of a raspy voice, but he does really wonderful videos with his grandparents.
I've seen the grandmother in Calabria.
The grandmother went off about how important the donkey was to the family.
Yeah.
Everybody had a donkey.
Yes, he did that song. That's where I saw him, yes.
This season, gather together and connect to Italy with Mediaset Italia. After holiday shopping or the big meal, turn on the TV and catch the latest and greatest from Italy's top channels, Canale 5, Italia 1, and Rete 4, on Mediaset Italia. Including a new season of the can't-miss talent show Amici, brand new current events program E Sempre Carta Bianca with Bianca Berlinger, new episodes of the quiz show Caduta Libera with everyone's favorite host, Jerry Scotti, plus brand new dramas and holiday specials. There's so much to be thankful for in Mediaset Italia, so call your local television provider today and ask for the channel.
One reason why I think, and I know Pat's going to agree with this, and I'm not saying it because my mother's from that or whatever, but, and I wrote about this in pizzaandcoffee.com talking about Neapolitan pizza and why Neapolitans are a certain way, but definitely their dialect, which I always found the most fluid and caressing, and this is coming from someone who used to perform music and had a stuttering problem, so I had to learn how to speak on my own. I pay attention to words. One of the reasons why Neapolitan music is better is because of the fluidity of it. Sicilian language, just like Calabrian language, where my father's from, it's a little more choppy and it's a little more, kind of, not that's not a good imitation.
Pugliese language, don't even go there.
Don't even try with Pugliese.
No.
It can't even be part of the conversation.
Rhythmically, it doesn't go, but the Neapolitans have that advantage, and I think that they just evolved together. So that's definitely one of the reasons.
You know what helps us? The schwa.
Yes.
Every word rhymes. Everything is, that us sound, which we probably got from the Oscans.
Yeah.
We don't have the headache that other Romance languages have of different endings. Because 90% of our endings are the same Yeah. E with two dots on top. Yeah. Do you realize this is supposed to be a Christmas Amato episode?
You know what? It's about the this joy is the most of who Italian. We are.
Yeah, this
no
is the
more
most,
Christmas. And we're going to be closed by eating panettone.
This is going to be two or
but
three
But we
got to
finish the mozzarella first,
yeah,
guys.
I know. We better.
But can I talk about the wines?
Yeah, let's have
and then if I can talk about the, then I'll talk about tomorrow.
Talk right? about yeah. the book and talk,
and I talk about. Yeah. The, all right, so guys, so as you know, me and my brother we have in Vino Veritas since 1997, and on the Upper East Side of Manhattan for 27 years coming on up, and it was the first liquor store in Manhattan after Prohibition. We took it over in the 90s, fully renovated it, stained glass from the 1800s. My father, rest in peace, made it look like a beautiful store. We happen to have been lauded so much, but of course, a lot of the copycats came after and tried to design it. And but it's hard because we build relationships with our producers, and that's hard to copy. And we care about it, and we specialize in Italian wines. And we were some of the first to introduce certain Italian wines outside of the areas of Italy. So even people in different parts of Italy didn't know these wines until they came to our store. And it's hard to keep in stock and rotate them because the importers themselves don't always have them. So I brought you guys gifts. There are three different wines. I usually don't like to give three different ones because who's going to get what? It would have been better to bring them, to bring you all the same ones. But you guys fight it out. I brought one wine from Cantine Olivella from Montesoma. Montesoma, when you look at Vesuvius, is from where my wife's house is from. It's constantly staring at you, and I love looking at it. So the two little tops, one is Soma, one is Vesuvio. At one point, they were part of the same complex called the Soma Complex, and then they separated. And on the slopes, I've been on a wedding and a lot of events there. Beautiful. And the volcanic soil leads to very interesting grapes and food. The same reason in Sicily. That's why they had the best produce. This wine was actually brought in America by, I think, Pane Bianco, thanks to my friend and one of the people who wrote a foreword to my second book, Ma, What Are You Cooking? His name is Charles Ciccolone. His wife is one of the greatest cookbook writers, and he's one of he's the top wine guy. I can't even shine his shoes. He's really amazing, and he brought it. The grape is called Catalanesca, very unique tasting, minerally, nice rounded fruit. This goes great with seafood, poultry. Another one that my friends from Caserta, we were mentioning it before, Alois, they resurrected grapes that were about to go extinct.
Wow.
There's Palagrello Bianco.
That is phenomenal.
Yeah.
Can you talk a little bit about that? Because our listeners would love to hear about that.
Which one?
About the resurrecting.
Yeah. Oh, so in Italy, there are over about 2,000 grapes.
Varieties.
Now, that includes the clones. And, of course, not all of them are able to be made into wine. But as I write in my first book, Wine Made Easy, while that sounds, that might make you scared, that gives you 2,000 reasons to look into Italian wines. Forget about qualitatively, quantitatively, when people want to be like, well, what about us? What about that? Listen, the French have maybe 600. Nobody. We have more goat species than anywhere in the world. We have more broccoli species. We invented broccoli. You name it, Italians have more quantitatively. So qualitatively, it's hard to make an argument, I would say. But there's no comparison. So funny enough, in the 90s, people used to say, well, Italian whites aren't that great. I'm like, that doesn't really sound true. Italian whites, I think, are the best in the world. If you want to talk about the very, very best, maybe you can talk about white Burgundy. But in terms of variety and in terms of quality, no one compares. And my friends, Alois, they're from Campania. I think their family originally is in the silk business and fabric business. And I think they originally came from France, funny enough. And they resurrected some grapes. One of them is called Palagrello Bianco, which is the white version of Palagrello Nero, which they also resurrected. And they blend with Casavecchia. And we carry those wines, too, from the Caserta area. A very historic area. I don't know if you guys ever been to the Reggio di Caserta. It was a very rich area. And funny enough, speaking of French, this white wine actually comes across as a very fine white Burgundy at half the cost. Mm. Then we have Colli di Salerno, a wine from Giuseppe Apicella. The Salerno area goes from the Amalfi Coast area, which is part of Salerno, all the way down to the, starts going towards the Cilento. It's made with Piedirosso. Piedirosso means red feet. It's the grape that goes into Gragnano, which is one of Pat's favorite wines. It's a red sparkling wine from Gragnano, where they make pasta. And we were the first people 20 years ago to introduce it to the American market. It's a red sparkling wine with pizza. This is not sparkling. It's red. It's a light bodied. I would definitely decant it for at least half hour. It's light, very subtle, peppery, and very elegant. Talking about resurrecting the grapes of Italy, they're doing this with grapes and with foods that, while a lot of traditions are being lost, a lot of Italians are trying to resurrect it because, or else, you know, if we don't save them, they're just going to be thrown away. And they're finding that even some grapes, for instance, like Catalanesca on the slopes of Vesuvius that were used for table grapes, they said, hey, let's try to coax the best quality out of it, out of these grapes, and try to make wine. And they're really phenomenal stuff. And the interesting thing is how many Cabernets can you possibly drink?
Right.
How many Merlots can you possibly drink? There's nothing wrong with it. But with Italy, it's just, it's endless. And they speak history. These wines speak history. And when you get to know the people, you really, it entices you to get to know the wines more, because the wines have the personalities of the people and the lands that they're grown in, the terroir.
I think that's so important. Like,
these are yours.
Giant. Thank you. How could we? We're gonna duke it out for them. I could see any of them being amazing because they come from your recommendation. But you're so right. I didn't know about the scope quantitatively of how much Italy has in terms of varietals. But when you go, particularly like with all of our passion for the South, you know, you go and you drink these local things that you would never know about here in popular conception. And obviously it's great that people want to drink things like Santa Margherita and the marketing and the branding and whatever, but it's so nice to be able to really dig into the passion behind each of these labels, the families there. Mm. And you were talking earlier about, you know, your new book, Ma, What Are You Cooking? It's born out of a similar sort of pursuit, right? Because
yes,
as you're selling these things, you're also learning about them. You're sort of a representative of your customer and going out and sourcing these things, right?
So one of the things, so when I first wrote Wine Made Easy about 20 years ago, I updated it a few years ago. It's like a basic, it looks like people who fear wine. But the reason why I wrote Ma, What Are You Cooking? The first book, Wine Made Easy, I wrote that in 4 weeks during the busy season. Ma, What Are You Cooking? It took a while to write. It took me 12 years to put it out because of all these crazy, talking about miserable, all these crazy things that happened in my life. And on Microsoft Word, it was 500 pages. I managed to shrink it. Some computer guy helped me to get into about 400 pages. And it's a very personal tome. It's called Ma, What Are You Cooking? Because we take wine so seriously, and my food background, an hour before closing, I would call my mother, me or my brother, who I work with, call my mother and say, Ma, what are you cooking? And tonight she goes, oh, you know, today we're going to make scarola imbottunata, whatever. Oh, we got to try this Palagrello. I know the producer. He just dropped off a bottle. That goes perfectly. So we try the wines. We're not just picking, this is 95 points, this is going to be good, 5 gold stars or whatever that means. We really care about, you know, so when the customer comes to us, one of the first things we ask, say, hey, what are you eating tonight?
Yes.
And if they're, and then we will tailor the wines to their foods. And the reason why we know so much of it is because in Italy, we have vast stretches of land. My mother has her own olive grove. She currently has about 600 of them. She's thinking about selling it because everyone's dying, so no one can take care of it. We're renting it out now. But at one point, her family, her and her sisters, we had about 5,000 olive trees. That's major production.
Yeah.
Major production of watermelon, hazelnuts. And I grew up around this, and my father had one of the best restaurants. He left it in 95, and my cousin has it and took it to even higher levels, and it still exists. And so I grew up around it. So when slow food was getting started in the 80s, I, as a kid, hanging out in my father's restaurant, I would talk to their representatives and listen to them. And I've asked hundreds of experts thousands of questions. And like I said, I wish I had amnesia, but I do have a great memory, and I memorize it all. I'm not a chef. I'm just somebody who loves our culture, and I love the people behind it. And that's why I love being with you guys. Everything that you guys do, we're talking about you guys doing it for the culture. You don't do it for ego. What Rosella does, what Pat does, what John does, it's very important. That's why I feel privileged to be here, because we all do this, and little by little, that's how we do great things. We all do our own, and I can't do what you guys do for time purposes. So we all get to share in these experiences, and these experiences are chronicled in my book. And speaking of chronicle, it starts off the meal chronologically. I talk about water and the 600 brands of Italian water and how seriously they take water. Salt, because I've seen the famous salt mines of Trapani. And I talk about olive oil, 30 pages just on olive oil. And then I go to the recipes. There's about 120 recipes. And before each recipe, I talk about wheat, how wheat is grown, made for pasta, because I've seen how they make it. I've been to Settaro, which is a great pasta factory. And I end it with Amaro and coffee, because it's a chronological meal. That's the way it is. And Pat asked me to come here and talk about Amaro and what we eat at the end of Italian meals. So that's a great way to talk about Amaro. And Amaro, I brought, Who took home the Rugolino that I brought? Was that you?
They always look at me.
Somebody took. I brought Rugola Amaro to that dinner we went to.
No, I didn't take it home.
Somebody took it home.
Because that was from Ishkia. Yeah.
Was it me?
Because Tiffany, one of our listeners, one of our star listeners, has it in her refrigerator because her family's from Ishkia.
Oh, nice.
And I had told her about it after we had it at your place, and she like sends me a picture of the bottle that she has.
I've been trying for decades to bring that in because there was other ones that my cousin used to bring at the restaurant, but I wanted to bring that. And I would send them emails, and they would never respond. They'd respond like 2 years later. I'm like, what's going on here? And then finally we got it back a few years ago. But somebody took it. And it's really great because Italians have philosophical, artistic, and scientific reasons for everything, and they really understood the concept of digestion a long time ago. So when Pat asked me to talk about why we do Amaro and everything after, some people would say you shouldn't have that much alcohol. But Italians are obsessed with bitter things, and eating bitter foods is good for your digestion. It stimulates the digestive enzymes and the production of saliva. So it's very good. And keep in mind, while some people say you shouldn't have stuff like fruit after dinner because it interferes with the digestion and creates gas and bloating, an Italian meal around the holiday, it's going to go 8 or 10 hours.
Right.
So you're not going to eat a steak and then start popping in fruit right after.
Right.
Right? You can't finish the mozzarella. You can't stop eating, right? It's amazing.
No, we're all eating the mozzarella.
It's amazing. Yeah. It's amazing. It's the best mozzarella.
Yeah.
So, you know, when you're eating for that, when it's such a prolonged, when it's such an open eating window, you're digesting it. And, you know, nuts are very important. You know, in Italy, they call nuts, a mix of nuts, frutta secca. Mm. You would think they're called frutta secca would mean dried fruit. It's not. Frutta essiccata would be dried fruits. Frutta secca would be nuts. And, it plays a big role in it. And, of course, they can't help it. Honeys, Italians are the masters of honey. They have different honeys that can go with the nuts and the cheeses for after dinner. That will lead into the Amaro. They take everything seriously. Speaking of honey, they have honey from, you know, the national tree of Italy is a strawberry tree.
Yeah.
And they make great honey from that.
Which is not the strawberry that we think of,
no,
by the way.
Totally people need yeah. to,
it, it's and not, it's delicious
That
fruit.
Became the national tree because somebody had it in.
Well, it's something about how it's the red, white, and green.
Yes,
the fruit's
yes,
red, yes. the flower, whatever.
Yes, yeah.
But it is a delicious. My wife and I ran across them in Spain if they sell the fruit. And I love eating things that I don't know what they are. And I'm like, what could this possibly be? The guy kept saying strawberry. I'm like, all right, obviously it's not a strawberry. There's a translation. So I started to research
strawberry
it.
Tree.
It's a strawberry tree. And it's very, very tasty, unique little
Yeah, it could be bitter too. I'm really crazy. I have all kinds of honeys. I have cardoon honey. My favorite is chestnut honey.
I love chestnut.
I have honeydew honey, which is not honey from nectars. It's actually honey from the bark.
I get that sometimes too.
Very good. It can be bitter. I'm getting my wife. This is how crazy I am because it's hard to find. There's something called Abamele, which is from Sardinia. I had it shipped to my wife, who's in Italy now. I said, don't forget. It's like, Italians are the masters of saving things. So
that's why you married a girl off the boat from Italy.
Yeah. No, she's very frugal. I can't go out to eat.
No, but this is the benefit. Because when she goes back to see the family, you have posto paisano.
Of course.
So her suitcase is full of stuff that you got shipped to her in-laws. That is why you have a true Campania brain. Because I would have pulled something like that. So you ship all the stuff that you can't get here because DHL is going to charge you $10,000. You ship it to your in-laws. And then your wife's suitcase is filled with all your goodies.
And forget DHL.
That is why if we had a gold medal, that is the most Neapolitan move. That's brilliant.
Hello, everyone. I have the distinct pleasure today to talk to you about a project, a mission that I am very much in love with, and that is the Anchor's Rum Mixer. Now, I have Carly Reed on with me today. Carly, did I say that right?
You did.
I am madly in love with this machine. I throw in sifted flour, and that machine goes for 15 minutes. It can mix any kind of flour I have thrown in there. It comes out like the most perfectly kneaded bread. But Carly has the insight on the mechanics of why it works. She can tell you why you should buy it off of Pleasant Hill Grain. So with that, Carly, I'm turning the microphone over to you.
It is an investment into your family, into your health, into your well-being from on a day-to-day basis. Our company has been in business for 25 years, and in that time, we've maintained a reputation for high-quality product offerings and excellence in customer service.
So now you heard from Carly. You're not happy with the mixer. I will eat the mixer publicly. Can I do that?
You can try.
Why am I offering that? Because I know it's not going to happen. And with that, I'm done.
For anyone who wants to learn more about the machine or get in touch with us directly, you can visit pleasanthillgrain.com.
But I have anxiety, speaking of Neapolitan, Like, for instance, so my cousin was the first person to introduce coladura 50 years ago. But it was still very hard to...
Tell people, because a lot of people... Remember, a lot of our listeners have no idea what that is.
That's a video show, by the way, I'm dying to do when we go to video in a couple months. Because to me, it's transformative, but go ahead.
So coladura... This is going to sound disgusting, but it's not.
Anchovy juice.
Yeah. Yes.
But it was
yes.
the ketchup of the Roman Empire.
Yes. Well, yeah, yes.
It's a derivative of, well, garum. Of garum. Yeah.
But I imagine back then it was probably more funky. I imagine.
I mean, they made it out of mackerel. More funky mackerel back then,
no refrigeration.
Yeah.
Maybe they put their enemies
It was hot anchovy juice yeah, back then.
But I don't think it was anchovy. I think it was mackerel. Well, it became anchovy.
It was hot fish juice.
Yeah.
From what I understand anthropologically is it was a... Garum was a very wide net.
Yes,
term,
it was. It was, yes.
Right? So, like, different locations use different fish, different recipes. That's why people say, can we recreate garum? No, we can't, because it would be like saying, can we recreate a hamburger? There's 10,000 different manifestations of it. Or a hot dog, right? I mean, it's too broad of a term. So, even now, like, we're going to talk about colatura, which is the only surviving version in Italy, right?
Well, now, I mean, if they're making, Sicily, like my friend's uncle, Agostino Recca, major producer of anchovies, and he makes one too. So I'm, now, and look, I'm sure something similar was made elsewhere, but.
But colatura survived.
Of course, because of Cetara, yeah. Right. And by the way, before I forget, speaking of resurrecting, in that area, if you go to Pompeii, a winery called Mastro Berardino has a section in the Pompeii ruins to make wine.
That's crazy.
So anyway, but, and we carry their wines, they're great. Colatura di Aligi, and I talk about this in my book, and I dedicated a recipe to my cousin who helped introduce it. They take the anchovies, they decapitate them and eviscerate them. They put them in these wooden casks called terzini, and they line them up in like a circle. They put salt, a layer of salt. They do it again. So they do like layers of it. Then they close it with a lid, and they put a stone to press it down. The juices come up, and then they poke a hole at the bottom. And then when the juice is going to come down, it picks up all the juices again. It filters through. And colare means to drip, so it keeps dripping through. They put it in a glass jar, and they make it evaporate outside, and it's very concentrated. And yeah, it's kind of salty, but and I hate to use this word because it's been ruined.
I know where you're going with
umami.
This.
Umami?
Yeah.
Yeah, I hate that word. I love the Japanese.
Yeah, yeah.
But I hate what the people have done. Like, everything's umami. Anyway, But it's great because it can accentuate certain dishes, even other fish dishes like sushi. Mm-hmm. It can go on to meat and brocco di raba and stuff like that. But a simple dish, and I've had it a million times in Cetara at Al Convento also, by the way. Great restaurant.
And Cetara, just for people who don't know, it's a town in Salerno.
Yeah, province of Salerno, yeah.
On the seacoast.
Right. After Vietri's Cetara, yeah.
And they are makers of they process... cure anchovies.
Like anchovies and the colatura, yeah.
And the colatura. So for those of you who don't know, and just so, like I said, this is new to a lot of our listeners. If you hate anchovies, a good reason may be because you've never had good ones.
Trillion percent.
I totally agree.
Yeah.
Whenever I make sautéed broccoli rabe and I get somebody who says, I don't like anchovies, I never tell them.
Same here.
And they won't
know. I always lie.
You know, I use the colatura because I have been studying this because I studied anthropology and this is my passion. I've been obsessed with Rome since I was a kid, which apparently now is a thing.
Yeah, we all are.
And I used to cook Roman meals from the recipes. I went to the Archeo Cucina in Posillipo, I think it was. But I never cooked with the colatura. And people have given it to me. I just never incorporated it. So the other day I said, I'm going to do this. My in-laws are coming over, and I made broccoli rabe. And I didn't have Aligi in the house, so I took that out. And it really smelled when I opened. I was like, it was, pretty funky. But man, what a change.
That's incredible.
What a change in the broccoli rabe.
It's so much better.
Oh my gosh.
There's no comparison. And then when I tell people, I'm like, just trust me. And by the way, very important, don't salt the pasta water when you're doing it because then it's going to be too salty. But if you are going to combine, it's basically, you could do aglio olio with pasta, hot pepper and that. But just this week, actually, and I posted about it, that you can also use it to make the pesto cedarese, where there's no set list of ingredients the way pesto genovese is. It's more of a mix of olives, herbs, and nuts.
Huh.
I combine green olives with brown olives. Funny enough, I use gaeta. It's been very hard the past 20 years to find good gaeta olives. I don't know if you guys found that.
Yeah,
I agree with that.
And if you find them, they're never pitted.
No, yeah. And they're like, there's something rotten. By the way, the variety is not gaeta. That's just because of the port they leave from. It's from Itri. The variety is called Itrana. Anyway.
It's from Itri?
Yeah, it's not from Gaeta.
You gotta
just like Castelvetrano, that's not the name of the olive.
Itri, there's a huge, they're all in Rhode Island.
Oh, interesting.
That's a Marla Civita. And we actually have Jolia, that's one of our listeners, is from E3. He was. Actually had him on. He was the one that had his ancestors from
In the Civil War.
In the Civil War, that were from the Bourbon.
The Bourbon soldiers. Yeah.
Wow. So they should really be called E3.
They're not. They're just like Castelvetrano is not from Castelvetrano. It's not.
Is there a movement in E3? Because I could see that happening in Italy.
Is there a movie?
No, movement in the sense of we want them renamed. Or no. E3, have a big sign. E3, home of the real Galleta Olive.
Oh, they should, yeah. But they're probably interested in Pringles or whatever
American. Right.
But because I get accused by everybody that I go on tangents. But if you're looking, you want to give anchovies, which we strongly encourage, a second try. Get Agostino Reca, or a good Sicilian product that's coming out of Sciacca. Sciacca is the capital of Sicilian anchovies, where the Cetare is in Campania.
Yes.
Get a good one. Get them. You can get them salted. Some people don't like to debone them, the ones that are packed in salt. A lot of people in Italy now, even friends of mine, like the ones that are packed in olive oil.
I like to pack them in salt for two reasons. One, the olive oil they're using is never going to be that good. Because they're going to use a little bit. Second of all, I like to use my own olive oil. So if you just get them in salt, it's just the purest form of anchovy.
Okay, but if you're not like, you know, if you're a little hesitant, you know, go for the ones in the oil.
Yeah.
Don't be a pain in the...
No, I'm
go
just
for the
that.
Ones in the oil. If you're new to the anchovy game, you know, start small, saute it, heat some oil, put a little garlic, add the anchovies, and watch them disappear.
They just melt.
Cook them until they melt.
But even this colatura, though, for having done it for the first time, I will say... Because I use anchovies every time I do broccoli rabe, and they melt away. They're beautiful. They get a nice little kind of butteriness. Almost like when you cook with sea urchins, same thing. They kind of melt into everything, which I love.
Oh, sea urchins.
I had them the other night.
Favorite thing.
And it never tastes fishy.
Never tastes fishy. But this colatura was a whole other level of flavor.
Oh, it's intense. Yeah.
And you know what I noticed, too?
Delicious.
It's like the truffle oil of the poor.
It's very true.
Yes.
Wow. Truffle oil.
Ooh. That is.
That just came to me.
Except it's real, because most truffle oil is not real. So this is the real truffle oil of the poor.
That is true.
Where was I even going?
Sorry.
I don't know.
I had
we
to say
real
that.
Each other very quickly.
I had this thought.
I'm like, I got to say this.
I had to say it. It was in here. I had to say it.
Write it down.
This is what I was going to say.
Write it down. Because Marcella.
The problem, write it down. I just got that.
We got a lot of listeners. They've never been to Italy, or they're in parts of the United States. Not only that, they're in parts of the United States where their access to good quality Italian products are either extremely limited or non-existent. And the beautiful thing now with the age of the internet is you can get really good quality stuff. And you order $100 worth of stuff from a lot of these places, you get free shipping.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of foods I think that those people in parts of America with this hard access to, like, oh, I don't like anchovies. And a lot of those things, and certain Italian cheeses and stuff, is because you have gotten a dumbed down, disgusting product that I wouldn't feed to a dog. And I like dogs. That's against a dog, but... You know, and I've heard people, I just spoke to someone today who will rename nameless because she's Italian-American. She married a non-Italian-American in a part of the country where there are no Italians. And they have one local Italian restaurant. And her in-laws always take her to this one local Italian restaurant and tell how wonderful the food is. And she can't eat it.
Yeah.
And she said, but a big problem is that a lot of these places use very poor quality ingredients.
Yeah.
And the real essence, the secret, the nuclear reactor of Italian food is the fact that they 100%. Use good quality ingredients.
Which is why my cousin, who I dedicated the colatura recipe to, rest in peace, he always said, in a way, an American chef has to be more talented because he's working with inferior ingredients.
If you're even making something like spaghetti aglio olio and you get this crap, you know, Teflon extruded pasta, like pomace oil.
Yeah.
The minced garlic in the jar, it's going to be terrible.
It's going to be bad.
It's going to be inedible.
Yeah. I'm
going to tell you what really changed my mind about everything. I think America could have just as good a stuff if we gave it the attention. We have great land in America. We have, we have fertile land. The problem is Americans don't demand top quality. Italians do.
No. Yeah. Although it's changing. I think Americans have been.
No, it's definitely
cuisine.
Better than it was
like,
in like
there's American, classic American cuisine, lobster thermidor.
Yeah, sure.
You know,
but I'm talking about, what they say, prima materia, what they say?
Materia prima.
Like, for instance, I was going to buy me a farmer's market that stopped with COVID, and there was a farmer that brought cauliflower.
Yeah.
And it was... Hours old, being picked from the farm, and it was had all those leaves around it, and that cauliflower was transformative.
Yeah,
when you ate that cauliflower, it was the most delicious thing on earth.
And my grandmother on the Neapolitan side, Piano di Sorrento side, my grandmother always made on holidays and on Sundays, she'd make it cauliflower in a bechamel sauce baked in the oven. That was like special thing for us. And I had it at Thanksgiving. I was like, this is the most insipid, tasteless cauliflower.
Yeah.
The supermarket cauliflower. I don't even know why anybody would eat it. And I said to myself, now that I've had, I had such good cauliflower, I would drive down. If I had that farmer's address, I'd go down there.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's around New Egypt. And I'm just saying that when you eat some of these products in America, they are so tasteless.
Oh, yeah.
I would get broccoli from her and cabbage from her, eggplant from her. It was transformative. My argument was, the reason I'm going on this tangent was, her stuff, and the Italians in Italy will go berserker over this, her stuff was just as good as the products coming out of Italy off the farm.
Really?
It was not inferior. And why was it? I was buying it from the farmer, hours after being picked. She was a small farmer. Her products were fantastic. So we in America could stand toe-to-toe. But the problem is, Italy cares about what it produces.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A heck of a lot more than us.
Yeah.
I knew a girl from Iowa
who
was from a farm family. They're like hundreds of thousands of acres of land, whatever that is, hundreds of acres. And she said that where she lived, a lot of the farmers were buying frozen vegetables.
Yeah.
I couldn't understand that. Because they didn't have, I don't understand how you grow on a farm, because to Italians, the land is so tied to people and what the land produces.
Yeah, but this is the same thing as the slow movement and the conversation about reviving grape varietals. Mm-hmm. I mean, we had the guy on, John Forte, the heirloom gardener, seed saving, and he talked about how since the Second World War, we've lost 90% of the varietals of vegetation, fruits and vegetables and stuff, and it's happening in Italy, too, and this is the response. This is like, okay, yes, it's more economically viable to plant one kind of onion, but what happens to our food when we lose?
Well, that's one of the reasons with the Irish famine, by the way. They were forced just for a monocultivar of potato, but also very interesting talking about the soil, and this is very important for the whole world. Because of the overuse of our soil, they predict that we have only about 60 more harvests left because of we're depleting the soil of the nutrients. So when you eat something, it doesn't have the same nutrients as it did before. And it's getting into a lot of discussions, if we're allowed to have the discussions. We're talking about carbon sequestration to get the carbon back into the ground. But one thing that some people don't want to do is to actually use in the more the historical way of using animals to help fertilize the soil.
Right.
Not an industrial farming, which is bad, but if we actually use animals more and to actually let them, most of the land in the world is you can't add crops. So what happens, first of all, in terms of food, when you send an animal out to that land where you can't plant anything, the way they convert that grass into the fatty acids and turn it into fat into their bodies, and when we eat that animal, is more nutritious than anything else in the world.
Sure.
So it's a no-brainer. And then, of course, their manure helps the soil. So we need to start looking into more of that. And it's also changing the taste of everything.
It's killing the taste of everything.
It's killing the taste
of everything. There's no taste. Nothing has taste left.
No.
And, you know, you talk about how delicious it is to get local mozzarella and these wine varietals, and you seek out, because when you find the good, you find the special, then in comparison to everything else that is essentially increasingly tasteless. And, you know, it just makes sense because of all of this monoculture and what we're doing. And, you know, you wrote a tome here, really, and it is a love
letter. I'm
going
to quiz you on it. I hope you read it.
Yeah, this is absolutely amazing. And not just the recipes, but also the idea that you're, you know, you've got, really, it is encyclopedic in its approach to everything from Italian-American stuff to Italian. And, I mean, I opened the page as we're talking, and here's New Haven pizza. So you've got everything from Italy to the United States and everything in between. And there's a lot of questions that I myself would ask, you know, Crusco peppers. I mean, every page I turn, there's more to learn about. So
we have so many listeners. They might be 1/8 Italian, 1/4 of Italian, that grew up in a part of the country where there were no Italians. And they heard family stories about big Italian holidays. And they want to explore this and learn about it and do it for their kids, but they didn't grow up with it. Like, for instance, we always had fennel at the end of a big meal, right? Slices of fennel. Why? And in Italy, they still do this. Why do you eat fennel? Fennel is a digestive, right? So if you had a big Thanksgiving, a big Christmas holiday meal, fennel would come out at the very end, right?
Us too.
Right? Raw fennel. And a lot of people don't know about these things. But if they get your book,
they will know about it.
This is Italian 101. This is Italian American for dummies, but you're not a dummy, but you know what I mean by that.
Get this book. Get this book. Get this book.
Thank you so
much.
Don't
buy one. Buy like 10 of them.
Thank you.
Now, if you have the now, a lot of people, I call you, you're like the evangelist in the family. You have an Italian-American family that's kind of going away from things, or your cousins are not as interested, and you got to buy them a book for Christmas. Buy 10 books. Buy a book for each
Thank
cousin.
Thank you so much.
Because they got to learn about this. And we got to support people like Gianluca, because what he's doing is he is, if John, can I just see the book here? Right? You have a little Italian boy. The cover of the book is a little Italian boy with spaghetti coming out of his mouth. That's me. Yeah. And that's going to be your kids one day. Just go out, buy the book, because we got to support the tribe. But not because of charity, but we got to support the tribe because we got to be together. We got to be united. My grandmother gave me my mission in life. I see it now at the podcast. My grandmother used to say to me, well, why can't Italians work together? Yeah. Why can't Italians cooperate? My grandmother used to see Italians, Americans, fine. She goes, well, why can't we work together? Because when we work together, we get far. And we got to support our Italian-American businesses. I said to you before, Pierluigi, Fatto a Mano, right? We talked about it. His panettone are so good. His panettone is so good. My brother Mariuld.
You're gonna Mariuld this one.
Can we try it?
Let's open it. This one because we don't have time to eat it.
But
now.
Anthony said they are that phenomenal. We all got to work together. Support
Next time he
this
texts
Christmas.
Me, oh, what a good focaccia, bro. Oh yeah.
He's a nice.
Oh yeah.
That's why Anthony.
Was my panettone good?
Was my panettone good?
You know when he had
good.
It Thanksgiving morning. He goes.
I'm sure.
Can we open it?
Let me say
I'm
something.
Sure, he did.
As we, you're gonna slice. Who's gonna slice? You're in
Rose
charge.
Rose Elka slice.
No, please. Please.
Don't bite me. It's
no.
My brother.
No, it's
Anthony's
okay.
The Mariuul. Don't tell my mother he's the Mariuul. Here you go. Cut
you
it.
Me to
no,
cut
that
up.
Her Anthony.
No, Anthony does no good.
Her Anthony.
No problems.
No.
That's why Roselle sent me the focaccia set, and I can't have it till Anthony wants it.
Anthony.
You know.
But let me say, I will say, it's so funny that we're doing this now because, you know, I never care if we don't talk about the topic because these are great conversations, and you can come back anytime,
Thank
absolutely,
so
especially we're all so close. You are an honorary co-host, whatever we talk
Thank
about,
you.
Whoever we interview. But this year, for some reason, I've been really, maybe because Christmas last year was Malokia Christmas for me, I'm like really into it, and I decided I'm going to do as much as I can throughout this holiday season, the entirety of the Advent, and I'm eating as much panettone as I can. I'm roasting chestnuts every other day. I'm really, really throwing myself in. And what a great way to end the episode but with a slice of homemade panettone from a listener himself. This is a great way to do it. So if you're out there, we're going to link the book on our show page. You're going to be able to find it.
When I tell you this book is spectacular, and I'm not when I say I incense it every night before I read it, I am being honest because everything you need to know about Italian American sitting at that table, everything you need to know is in that book.
Thank you so
every much. Every single solitary Italian American
coming from you, that means coming from it, all of you.
That,
this is two people who have spent their entire lives asking questions incessantly with photographic and phonographic memories.
Let me tell you, I think.
Wow. Wait, hold on a minute. Hold on.
Wait a minute. We're distributing. We're closing by distributing the panettone, and we got a wow
we have
out of Luciano our host,
LaManarca.
Luciano's
we
here.
Are using his venue today to record. He is born and raised in Italy. He had a piece of Fatta a Mano panettone, and he just said, wow.
Okay,
it's that
here we
good.
Go. Buon appetito. Let's see.
Oh.
That's delicious.
I mean, the texture of it.
Oh, my gosh.
It's like a feather.
Mm. Now remember something. This is not a commercial. This is not a paid endorsement.
No, but
we're supporting our own kind. Go out there because
let me tell you, there are very few people that I think could measure up to Cavaliere Avvocato Patrick O'Boyle Esquire.
Very few.
But Gianluca's got it.
Yeah,
we're soul brothers.
Yeah, but you know what? I'd rather Pat be out there than me because just before, it was my fault. I was throwing out some expletives. You can't put my face on too many things. Pat, you can, because he's much more polished than I am. So I'd rather Pat do all the...
Gianluca is so knowledgeable that one time I got contacted. My friend was like, my daughter wants a wine bridal shower. I'm like, congratulations.
Oh, yeah.
And she's like, no, but we want you to do the whole... And I was like, I don't know anything about wine, really. I drink everything from Carlo Rossi to Sesicaia. I'll drink nail polish remover. I'm not the one. No, you have to do it. So I call up Gianluca, and Gianluca wrote me a script.
Mm-hmm.
A script for this wine bridal shower. I got requests to do it again.
See?
I didn't know.
I totally forgot about
he
that.
Just
this
taught
is the
me
man
how
to know.
He taught me how to say herbaceous, and everybody loved it.
Herbaceous.
Well, but by the way, thank you for saying that, and this is why I appreciate you people for what you do. And you're really doing it because you care about this stuff. Look, Pat just brought the panettone. He's not making money off of it.
No. No.
Right? I'm not making money off this mozzarella.
No.
You know, who's, so to me, that's very important. I always talk about my friend's olive oil. It's my favorite olive in the world. I get nothing out of it. I just tell people, make sure, if you want, I'll put you in contact.
We'll take.
I know a pistachio Bronte. I know, just because I care about these people, you know?
You got a guy. You got a guy for that.
You got to have a guy. And you got to, eating well, so this is the season to do it. Indulge a little bit. You want to order panettone, we will link it from our show page. It's a listener. This is great. We're going to put the mozzarella on there.
And by the way, before I forget, we were supposed to do about Amaro. You know what's a good Amaro made in America by an Italian guy that we sell? Don Ciccio.
Don Ciccio.
Really? Oh,
Amaro delle Sirene, very good. He makes one, he makes a few different ones. He makes one with the Figa d'India. Prickly pear, very hard to find. Very good. I swear to God, it's
but
as
do
good.
They have it at In Vino Veritas?
When we can get it, yes, we do.
Okay. I will link this all from the show page. Get this stuff for your holiday season. It's early enough. This is coming out tomorrow or the next day. We're celebrating the Feast of St. Nicholas today, so it's right around the corner. You've got plenty of time. Order this stuff. Get it in. If you're in New York or the area, go see John Luke in the city.
Go to his wine
yeah,
store.
Yeah, well worth it.
Hug the wine store.
In Vino Veritas, corner of East 74th Street and 1st Avenue. If I'm not there, you can find my brother. Our staff is also great, too. And I love talking about this stuff. I hope you have like an hour to kill because I can't just give you a simple answer.
This is the if you love talking to Pat, you're going to love talking to John Luca. Yeah. Go in there, get the stuff for the holidays. And we'll be back next week with more. And I certainly can say thank you to the Generoso Pope Foundation,
yes.
To the St. Pio Foundation having us here. Our friend Luciano, this is a great place. We hope we'll be back here as well. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Da 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 da
da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da